Today I may not have a thing at all, except for just a dream or two. But I've got lots of plans for tomorrow, and all my tomorrows belong to you. Right now it may not seem like spring at all. We're drifting and the laughs are few, but I've got rainbows planned for tomorrow, and all my tomorrows belong to you. No one knows better than I that love keeps passing you by. That's fate. But with you there at my side, I'll still keep turning the tide. Just wait. As long as I've got arms that cling at all, it's you that I'll be clinging to. And all the dreams I dream, beg or borrow on some bright tomorrow, they'll all come true. And all my bright tomorrows belong to you.
Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature the dynamic duo of vocalist Jenna Mamina and guitarist Rolf Sturm. Let's roll!
No one knows better than I that luck keeps passing me by. That's fate. But with you there at my side, I'll still keep turning the tide. Just wait. As long as I've got arms that cling at all, it's you that I'll be clinging to. And all the dreams I dream, beg or borrow on some bright tomorrow, they'll all come true.
Jenna and Rolf, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about your brand new record.
Great. Begin to Dance.
Begin to Dance. Where did you record it?
We recorded it in a studio, Kaleidoscope Sound, in Union City, New Jersey.
Okay.
Jenna had come out. And we. This is our second recording, and it's the second time we used this studio. We have a marvelous engineer, Frank Fagnano.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Frank, who we've worked with, and I've worked with for years. And he sort of freelances at a number of different studios and thought, well, for the duo project, this Kaleidoscope Sound would be a good place for us.
Do you record it live?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. That's the way to do it, yeah.
And in a duo, it's hard to not record it live.
Sure.
I mean, you know.
For sure. Yeah.
I can't really lay my parts down and then.
Right.
You know.
But people do that. You know, somebody will record and then send the file to Paris and then record the vocals send it.
We have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's when we play, there's such give and take that we'd lose that if,
if we didn't. It's very organic.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about some of the songs. I knew that, Rolf, you've written some on the mm-hmm. record.
Yeah, a couple of them on this one.
The title cut?
The title track, yeah, Begin to Dance.
Yeah. Can you talk about the origins of that song? I like the idea of beginning to dance.
Sure. I wrote it a number of years ago. I was up with a bunch of people in, I guess, New Hampshire, and everyone had gone off to ski. I'm not a skier.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, the dead of winter. It was beautiful. And I thought what I would do is I would stay and just write some music. And I had, you know, when I was younger, I danced a bunch more. And I was actually in a program at the Pennsylvania Governor's School for the Performing Arts where I was dancing for about 6 weeks. I'm not a dancer, mm-hmm. but when I was a kid, I would, you know, do stuff. And I frequently have said or heard people say, you know, you only have one chance at this dance, meaning, you know, carpe diem, you know.
Sure.
So it was in there in the back of my mind thinking about, you know, time is just screaming by. You know, you get to a certain age. When I was younger, you know, when you're young, you don't think about time going by so much. And as you get older, you start realizing, do it now.
If you have to dance more.
Just big first step. Just do it.
The ocean pulls its quilt away. Start and finish every day, even when there's no one there to see. The stars reflect on a yesterday, sharing a light that's passed away, dancing on dark waters no one sees. Begin to dance. First steps are never easy. Begin to dance today. The mountains stand so quietly, enduring time for all to see, watching indecision from afar. Shadows bring an urgency, frustrating our complacency, reminding us of who we really are.
dance. First steps are never easy. Begin to dance today. Searching for the answers from within. Begin to dance. First steps are never easy. Begin to dance today.
As a performer, when you're performing and people dance, I mean, that's the ultimate compliment. And you know, I mean, I know I don't do it for the applause. You know, you do it for the satisfaction of performing. But when people dance, that's the icing on the cake, I think.
Mine is when they cry.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
laugh and cry. Laugh and cry. But if they dance, that's cool.
And that's just, the dancing is just sort of an extension of the laughing,
mm-hmm.
You know? Just joy, right? Mm-hmm. So some of the other songs on the record, I mean, you had an interesting pairing of the Black Hole Sun. Can you talk about how you came up with those two songs?
I'm a huge Soundgarden fan.
Yeah?
And I just love that song. And I've talked about it with other people to perform it over the years, but I would just sing it around the house.
Right.
And I loved him, and I like that song. The other one.
But you married, with I Can't Stop This Feeling.
Hooked on a feeling. Yeah. One day we were in Merced, California at my friend Dr. Mark Spitzer's house and his wife, Tammy. And I said, help me, can we try this? And Rolf's like, well, wait a second. And he started playing something. And then we did a gig in Fresno. And by the next day, we had this really great combination. And it's pretty crazy. Jazz radio loves that song.
Wow. Which is strange. I mean, you know, I guess jazz, the umbrella is getting larger and larger.
Well, the tradition of jazz is to take some popular songs and add your own, you know, imprint.
And actually, that was really one of the things that when people say, what do you do? Well, we do have some originals, and we do play some jazz standards, older jazz standards, what are considered to be jazz standards. And then we also like to take pop tunes from like when we were growing up.
Right.
And let's try doing something different with them. Sometimes we do them somewhat close to the original, but frequently we'll try to do something different with them. Thank you.
just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's all right. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy. Taste stays on my mind. Girl, you got me thirsty for another cup of wine. I got it bad for you, girl, but I don't need no cure. I'll just stay addicted and hope I can. All the good love when we're all alone. Keep it up, girl. Yeah, you turn me on. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
Lips as sweet as candy. The taste.
stays on my mind. Girl, you got me thirsty for another cup of wine. I got it bad for you, girl, but I don't need no cure. I'll just stay addicted and hope I can endure all the good love when we're all alone. Keep it up, girl. Yeah, you turn me on. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. You said I'm hooked on a feeling, and I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
I think it's great to personalize it and give it your own flair.
And it's something that I did before reconnecting with Rolf, and it's something he did before connecting with me. So coming together, we had, oh, I love that song. Let's do it. Yeah. So it's growing in something that we've already been doing for so long and coming to another place together.
Can we talk about how you two came together and started to collaborate?
Wow.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'll interject.
Yeah, please do. It's years and years and years ago. Back in the 90s, I was in a group in New York City called Illuminati. And then what happened is I guess it was Jenna, through some people you knew, Phil Lesh was looking for someone to arrange a big band, rock big band for the Blues for Allah's 20th anniversary?
Actually, Gary Lambert came up with the idea.
Okay.
Gary Lambert he wrote the Grateful Dead Almanac.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he's a dear, dear friend, brother of mine. And he had this, in his own mind, wanted to put together a band for the 20th anniversary of the Blues for Allah that they did at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco.
Right.
And he and my brother are good friends. And so he asked, would you guys like to be a part of this project? He invited someone out from New York to arrange for a big band and got all these people from the Bay Area to do the gig at the Great American. And we were at a rehearsal and sound check at the Great American the day that Jerry Garcia died.
Oh, wow.
So we had to cancel the gig because none of us could really breathe.
Sure.
Big follower my whole life. And so they postponed it till November. And in November, we did the show to two sold out nights. And then the person that was arranging it back in New York said, I'm going to take this back to my band in New York. Rolf was in that band.
Okay.
He invited my brother and I to be two of the vocalists. And then we did it on the East Coast and then traveled all throughout the West Coast and in between with a combination of people from the East Coast and the West Coast.
Yeah. So that the band was originally just original music, but because of Jenna's connection and Gary Lambert's connection and the band sort of morphed into riding that wave of Grateful Dead.
Pre-jam bands, right. Way before any
so
of
this
that was happening.
15, 20 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
I think 1995 was the first time it came back to New York. I think that was
And
rehearsal.
We did it in 94.
There were six horns and two guitars, keyboards, bass, percussion. There was
really
a string quartet. Everyone was had their own amplifier, you know, almost everywhere.
Really loud.
It was pretty loud.
So I'd be on stage. I never heard Rolf really play. I'd see him over on one side. There's, you know, 17 people
part
on
of
stage.
The whole sound, yeah.
And one night we were on a bus going somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, snoring and bus and sneezing and coughing on the bus. And I hear this guitar playing, ding, 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 you know, playing this beautiful song. Where's that coming from? So I was awake. I kind of crawled back there and there was Rolf playing. And I said, you're playing, I can't remember what you were playing.
I don't
some
know what
standard.
It was a jazz standard.
I said, I sing jazz. He's like, you do? Because we didn't know who each, you know, what each other did.
Big entourage.
Right. You'd have these moments of, you sit next to someone at dinner the night before. Oh, wow, cool. You're originally from Pennsylvania. So that's where we started. And we said, someday we should play together.
And fast forward.
Well, yeah, what happened is that Jenna then had, after about 3 years, she moved back to California. Well, she was in California, but she really kind of focused back into California, the Bay Area, and really has had a successful independent career, both recording and performing, for years. And it was a good 17 years or so, and we hadn't been in touch at all.
Right.
Facebook.
And then, yeah, Jenna, you know, friended and sent out notice and said, hey, is anybody still in town? I'm coming out for a music conference. And I thought, Jenna Mamina, yeah, I'm still in town. What are you doing? And so we said, well, we figured out a time where we could get together for some tea. And this is in like January.
It was in January. Oh, it was like, you know, God, blizzard.
Right.
And we got caught up on what each other had done. And we
basically said, so what have you been doing for the last 17 years? Stack of CDs. What have you been doing? Stack of CDs. We traded
fun. You know, like a little library of CDs with each other. And we talked about maybe, you know, after 17 years, maybe the day had come to put that duo together that we had talked about all those years ago.
Mm-hmm. You know. And here we are.
And here we are. And so actually that was in January. And we
I was living in Mexico then.
Oh, wow.
We looked at our books and we were trying to figure out, well, when can we start this thing? When can we? And I was thinking, well, we probably should record up here in the New York area and get Frank Vignano involved with it. And we looked and it was, I think it was June was the next time that we could actually get together. Cause we both were, you know, pretty
we
busy.
We still hadn't played together yet.
Yeah. No, just talking
no,
about
no,
it.
Yeah. We just had tea. So what we did was we figured it out so that we had Jenna fly in on one day and the next day we did, a rehearsal. The next day we did our first gig in Manhattan. And then the next two days, we went into the studio and we just recorded.
So just jumped in head first.
We just jumped in. And we had like the floor
Do
was
you
strewn
know this song?
With pages and music. And
hey, wait,
yeah.
I know it's by your left foot.
Yeah. Okay, I think I know that song. What key do you
what
do
key?
It in?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And that was the first CD. That Spark is the first CD that we had done.
So Spark references sort of the way
you're asking all the good questions.
Oh, my God.
You're getting all our secrets.
Sure. Well, I mean, it seems you guys just jumped in and there was a spark and there was a magic, right?
See, that you know, we wish you were there at the time because...
You would have saved us a lot of time naming that record.
We recorded the thing. We you know, mixed it and mastered it. And
we had the photos. We had all the text ready.
We just didn't have a name.
Right.
And it's... not so easy to come up with a name. So we were going back and forth. And finally, I just wrote this huge list, like maybe 20 names. And I said, this is Stream of Consciousness. Just see if anything just kind of sparks your imagination.
Great titles. Yeah. And he said, maybe something. And I responded with one word. I said, spark.
Perfect.
So that's what we called it. Yeah. And then two of the songs on the record have the word spark in them. We didn't even know.
Yeah,
that,
go figure, right? So now you're performing, I mean, I guess I should mention too that Rolf, you're on the East Coast, you're in New York City?
In the New York area, in New York and in New Jersey.
And Jenna, you're in Northern California?
And in Michigan.
So you're sort of in the center here.
Right.
So you get together and perform all over the place.
Yeah.
How often... How often do you get together to perform?
As much as possible.
Yeah, generally, I mean, it at least once a month, generally. I mean, every now and again, a month will scream by where we haven't done anything, but and we'll do something like maybe a week, you know, or at least an extended weekend, and sometimes a couple times a month. So, you know, we've been in Europe where it's been longer than a week, you know.
Sure.
Just to make things happen.
Europe, Mexico, the States.
Yeah.
And how is the music perceived in Europe versus Mexico or United States? I mean, you get different reactions or the same reaction? I mean, what are your thoughts about the audiences?
I don't know. I think that, you know, what we do, because it's acoustic guitar and voice, it's pretty intimate.
It's more personal.
And, yeah. And I think that, I mean, we can kind of rock out and we do, but it's still on a kind of personal level, I think. And I think that that resonates with certain people. And I mean, house concerts are great because it's a listening audience.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, a sports bar or something like that.
And which I think I won't play in a sports bar.
Thank you.
But then we'll play in festivals too,
right.
In front of hundreds, thousands of people.
Sure.
And
but
we
that's
get
usually captive audience as well, right? For they're there to hear music versus watch the game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, for instance, there's a festival down in Mexico where sometimes people will be playing on stage and maybe half the audience is sitting listening and then half the audience is milling about and doing stuff. And we found that when we play, because again, it's just a duo and it's, you know, Jenna's voice is so captivating. It's very, very personal and intimate. This last time, everyone was sitting.
Even the people that were cooking and stuff were just stopped.
Just sitting, and it was very, I mean, in a certain sense, it was like, are we doing something wrong?
Why isn't anyone saying anything?
Right. What happened?
Right. But it was, you know, because they're listening, and, you know, sometimes you think, well, they're not really doing anything during the tune, but then at the end of the tune, they'll erupt.
Yeah. And so that's great. I mean, but it's a credit to what you guys do that people stop. And
right,
listen,
right?
Because there's so much distraction in the world these days.
Yeah.
So it's nice when people stop and pay attention. You know, that's the whole idea.
Ideally, yeah. I mean, music can function on a lot of different levels. I mean, there's great music that really gets people up and dancing and wanting to hoop and holler. And there, you know, there's all different kinds of function for music. But I think that, like what Jenna said, if people can laugh and cry during the course of a set, then that's probably, you know, a success.
So when you're talking about having people cry, do you think it's the emotion of the song, the story of the song, the performance of the song, or all these things? I mean, what?
D, all of the above. I pick the songs that I choose to sing, I pick from my heart.
Well, can you give me an example of one of those tunes?
My One and Only Love.
Yeah.
Mm. And my second favorite? That's nearing up to the first, Begin to Dance.
Nice. That's nice. Thank you.
And that's the title cut from the new CD?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Jenna, I know that you have had some experience with Abby Lincoln. Can you talk about that? Was she a mentor, an influence?
Yes. My second mother.
Okay.
Met her in 1988. And by 1992, I guess, when I was going to New York, before this band, and then I was doing some other stuff there, I needed a place to stay one weekend, and I called her. And she said, well, of course, this is Moseka House. This is the home for singers. Come stay with me. And then over the years, I would stay longer, and then I ended up living with her for a while. And it, as far as mentoring, it was more of a spiritual mentorship.
Sure.
Just sitting with her in a room having tea I learned something from
right.
And stories and we would sing together and listen, and it was really special. And she was close to everyone in my family, and I miss her.
Yeah.
A lot.
I mean, it seems that the tradition of jazz and of blues and a lot of this music is handed down. I mean, it's, I mean, now I see people learning music on YouTube or whatever, but the personal touch of really learning from someone who's been there and who has the stories and has been down that road is invaluable.
Yes, I've been blessed with having people, Abby, another woman by the name of Bev Hahn, who was from Michigan, June Millington, was the first female band to get signed to a record label in 1966. I've met pioneers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've studied with Bobby McFerrin and
oh, really?
Lots of people in the Bay Area that are well-known in different genres of music, because I don't identify as a jazz vocalist. I just, as Abby taught me years ago, I sing all these things. She said, you don't sing jazz, you sing songs.
Right. People want to put
exactly
things in genres.
I sing
pigeons.
Songs.
Yeah. You're a singer.
Yeah. I'm a vocalist, songwriter, vocalist, interpreter.
I like it.
My thing from Bobby was, we were sitting at a table in the middle of the night, a bunch of us, and he looked over at me and he said, you got it. And so that was one of those.
Yes.
A blessing.
Thank you.
For sure.
Yeah.
You've arrived, you're there, and yeah.
And since then, a lot of the people from Voicestra are people that I've worked with, which is his group of vocalists, and they're my peers, and we all hang out, and I've worked with Patty Cathcart of Tuck and Patty, and lots of amazing musicians just in the Bay Area alone that perhaps the world doesn't know about, but that are well known in their own thing.
Sure.
And studied in New Orleans with people. And
you have?
Yeah, I lived in New Orleans.
I love New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I miss it.
Is there anything that you can pinpoint that you learned in New Orleans?
How do I say it? That when I'm there, I'm in the magic.
Yeah.
It feeds me and I get it.
Excellent.
I get on the ground and stuff just happens because yeah. I'm connected to the magic of the city.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's just
of
a
the
spirit.
State, Louisiana's.
Yeah.
We've toured quite a bit in that area and it's just a different feeling.
Hallowed ground. There's just a spirit there. That's yes. Incredible.
Yeah. There seems to be a sort of an authenticity of energy. I don't know. There's sort of a flow, you know, that it's not, you know, people for the most part aren't putting something on.
It's inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my know? Gosh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rolf, have you had any mentors in your career? Can you talk about a little bit how you started and what got you to this point in your career?
Well, when I was quite young, I dabbled in a lot of different instruments, you know. Mm-hmm. And my parents they celebrated the arts and were very encouraging. And guitar was one of them that I dabbled in a little bit, but didn't get much past Michael, Row Your Boat Ashore and that kind of thing. When I was in high school, I got together with some chums and we put together a band, but we were kind of just doing original tunes. So I wasn't really learning much as mm-hmm. far as, you know, how other people played. It was really my sophomore year, at the end of my freshman year in college, where I realized, wait, I'm blowing this. I'm in college and I'm not really studying what I wanted to be studying. So I switched majors, and then my sophomore year, I started to study guitar. And
nice.
I went to Berkeley up in Boston that year. And I realized, my God, I've got a lot to learn. You know, I mean, I know some bar chords, I know some open chords, and I know a pentatonic scale, you know. So
there's more?
Yeah. Well, it's a surprise to me too. But I had a lot of catching up to do.
Right.
And I had some good friends there who gave me mixtapes back when they were mixtapes, and mm-hmm. it was just one great guitar player after another. And I skipped around to a few different schools. And finally, when I got out, I felt like I had a lot on my plate of what I still needed to work on. I was really still behind, but I wanted to get to the New York City area and start studying with some people who I really admired. And I got, you know, I got a lesson with Joe Pass.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be an hour lesson. I'd gone up to him, at a place called Fat Tuesdays, where he was playing solo guitar, and I was young and I walked up to him, you know, before his set. as opposed to waiting until after. Yeah. I said, you know, Mr. Pass, and he said, well, do you play? I mean, are you a guitar player? I said, yeah, I'd love to get a lesson. So he gave me a pack of matches. He said, this is the hotel I'm staying in. So why don't you stop by tomorrow at, 1 o'clock or something. And it was supposed to be an hour lesson, but we hung out for almost 3 hours, and he told me all kinds of stories, and it was just great to have a one-on-one and get to talk to him.
That's life-changing, right?
It was just remarkable. I mean, I had done little finger-picking stuff when I was in high school, but never really did any kind of finger style. And he said, have you ever done any kind of finger picking? And I said, yeah, a little bit. He said, well, you ought to go ahead and mess with it. And don't worry if it's not the proper style. Don't worry if it's not classical guitar. You'll find your way. You'll find something with it. And it was really a marvelous conversation. I had marvelous insights. And at the end, he had said, you ought to come out to California. I could get you a job teaching at GIT, Guitar Institute of Technology. Yeah. And I was like, wow, well, I just got here to New York and I'm, just starting to make inroads, but thank you very much. Of course, the end of this is that about 6 months later, he comes back to New York. He's playing at the Blue Note with someone. And I walked up to him and said, Mr. Pass, it's really good to see you again. And I had a lesson with you last time you were in town. And he said, oh, was it any good? And of course, for me, it was, it was so memorable.
Huge, yeah.
But for him, he probably does these lessons, all along the way. Yeah. So it was sort of a dose of reality. But I got some lessons with Bill. I got a lesson with Bill Frisell, and I got a bunch with John Abercrombie, and a few with Jim Hall. And all of them had different things to impart. It was all, they all sort of taught and demonstrated in different ways, but it was really good to kind of sit down. As you say, when you're learning from someone, you're sitting in front of them and talking to them, and they're explaining it the way they explain it. It gives you insights that you don't get just looking on YouTube and having someone else show you what they did.
Sure.
You know.
And now you teach and you have a method?
Near the end of my college career, I had a teacher. I got a major in, it was a Bachelor of Fine Arts with a major in jazz guitar, even though I don't really necessarily consider myself a jazz guitarist. I just don't quite have that language,
Right.
But he was teaching me, I don't know how technical to get here, but he was teaching me the melodic minor scale. And it's very clearly the major scale with a flatted third degree. But I didn't know, I knew the major scale on neck of the guitar. I didn't know where all the thirds were. So if you have a C major scale with an E flat in it,
right?
I looked at it and said, well, that's also a B flat major scale with a sharp one. And I knew where all the ones were, the do of do, re, mi, fa, sol, do. So I learned it that way. And I came in the next week and he said, well, all right, play the scale. So I played. He said, oh, good. Try playing all over the neck. So I played all over the neck. He said, that's great. Can you put it into other keys? I said, and then he did it. And he said, wow, that's great. And I said, yeah, but I kind of learned it a different way in my head. He said, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know about it. Right. You did it, and you can use it. You have the sound. So I started realizing that I was thinking in some ways in a different way than what's standard.
Right.
So I was writing this out for students for years, and I thought I should just put out a book and just give them the book and just work from the book.
Right.
So I have a major method for... And it's called major method because a lot of the scales are based on the major scale. So if you learn the one scale on the neck of the guitar, there are a number of other scales you can get through just altering one note here or there,
Just thinking a little bit outside of the box.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Well, Jenna, hearing you sing, your voice is, to me, a mellifluous instrument. When did you know that you were a singer and wanted to be a singer?
My mom and dad would tell you that I would coo when I was less than a year old and stay up really late just cooing.
Yes.
So probably then.
Okay.
My brother Nino was a vocalist. We came from a musical family.
Yeah, was there music in the house?
All the time, music in the house. He played guitar. My brother Mitch plays guitar. My sister plays. And my dad played organ and accordion. Good Italian that he is. And my mother's from New Mexico, and she and two of her sisters had an Andrew Sisters group growing up. So.
And you saw them perform as a child?
No.
Oh, no.
But I have lots of...
Oh, so when they were growing up.
Yeah. I had an uncle that built mandolins and other cousins that are in the music business to this day. So
you couldn't help but become a musician. It would have been a disappointment if you
I didn't choose
became it. A doctor or something, right?
It would have been a good idea. Financially, it would have been a great idea. Right. But no, I think it chooses you.
For sure. Yeah. So you knew as a little girl that you wanted to...
I used to pretend that I was going to be on the Johnny Carson show, and I'd go to they'd say, go to bed, and I'd go, okay. And I'd go in my room, and right. I'd hear Johnny Carson music on, and then I'd pretend like I was the guest for the night.
Can you talk about those early days, early influences as a singer?
Nat King Cole.
Yeah,
when I was a little girl, because my mom loves Nat King Cole. Perry Como and Frank Sinatra, and of course Ella. I'm a big James Taylor fan.
Mm-hmm.
Joni Mitchell, of course. Having older brothers and sisters, I listened to a lot of that music. My first two records my brother gave me when I was 5 years old was a Jim Croce record and a Carole King record, and the Carole King record is called Rhymes and Reasons, and one of the songs on the record is called Bitter with the Sweet. I knew the whole record.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly where they corrected the tape and where she breathed funny. And,
sure.
And there's a particular song, Bitter with the Sweet, that actually Rolf and I recorded on our first record. And I continue to get influences. I listen to music, not a lot, but when I do, I take my time and get to know somebody. And then meeting Abby really changed for me, talking Patty.
Did I read that you did an Abby Lincoln project where you did a record of her music?
I did.
Yeah?
I did. I did originally it was a vocal piano record with a pianist by the name of John R. Burr from the Bay Area. And I'd been wanting to do the record for years. In fact, my very first record was to be a tribute to Abby.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the studio picked out. I had the music all arranged. I had the musicians all from Nashville and the Bay Area and a couple other people from New York coming out to record. And 2 days before, she called me. And she, in the conversation, said, so are you still considering doing a record of my music? And I said, yes. This was in 1998. I said, yes, I am. Why? And she said, because I don't want you to do it.
Oh, no.
Because a tribute record is for people who are dead, and I'm not dead yet.
Wow.
And I knew if I did it, she would never speak to me again.
Sure.
Because she didn't condone it.
Right.
So I called my brothers, and I said, what do I do? And she had said on the phone, so pick songs that influence you. And I was going in the studio in 2 days.
Yeah.
And I said, well, can I do a couple of your songs? Sure. So I picked two of hers, and then I picked other people that influenced me, and we basically created the charts, kind of like how he and I did the first record, in 2 days' time, and recorded 14 songs, and they were all first takes. We'd do it one time, and the band would go, cool. And I'm like, but can I? No, it was great. It's cool. And then I'd listen back and couldn't do any better. So sure. That's how I thought records were made. You just go in and you sing it one time and that's it.
A lot of records, good records are made that way.
And my record Under the Influence was my first record. And then years later, I was at a gig and I had seen her about 6 weeks before. And she looked over at me and she said, so are you still going to do a record of my music? And I said, yes. And she said, well, you better start it.
Oh.
So I finally got the okay to do it.
Yeah.
And when I found out she passed, which wasn't so soon, so long after that, I did the record. And then we ended up overdubbing my friend Dayan Kai, who's a blind instrumentalist from Maui, and he played different instruments, and a couple of girls that were from Irene Cesar from Turtle Island String Quartet originally. And just it's become... It was one of those gifts that I wanted to give myself.
Right.
So I'm glad that I did it. And it's called The Music and the Magic of Miss Abby Lincoln.
And it's available worldwide?
In my car and my mom's purse. I think some of it's online. I'm not quite sure. It is available on Blue Coast Records. If you go to bluecoastrecords.com, it's available as a duo with the guitarist and then again redone with the band, with different instrumentalists, not a band.
Okay. Do you two ever perform with more instrumentation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have people. In fact, last time we were in New Orleans, we had we were performing a few different places, but a really good friend of ours is the saxophonist with Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, John Isley, and we'd played years ago with him, and we went and I also know the guitar player from Southside, and we went to see them play at the big festival, and they came to our gig that night, and we were saying to John, if you show up, bring your horn,
sure.
You know, and so he did. So he sat in with us, and Glenn didn't bring his guitar, so he couldn't, but, you know.
And then we have people, wherever we're at sometimes we'll jam, but we've done shows, and we have ideas about doing a recording with different people.
It's fun. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what's in store for the future?
More music.
Yeah, we're definitely, booking on out into 2018 and looking at 2019 as one has to do, you know, to try to get as much on the books as possible. And we're thinking, this is all precursory, and who knows, it all may change in another week, but we were thinking about maybe doing more of a full band recording for the third recording. But we're still ruminating.
We get in the car and we have those long nights of driving in the car. That's where a lot of the ideas come up. Hey, I got this idea.
Yeah, we're thinking also maybe of trying to do more originals, perhaps, and do some co-writing and maybe something like that for the third album.
Cool. I think that music keeps people young. I mean, all the musicians.
Look how great we all look.
Right?
Fabulous.
We look great.
We're so
on the
young.
Radio. I look amazing.
Mamacita's here.
In your delivery, Jenna, it almost seems like a playfulness. And I know that you do the Scat for Cats. Can you talk about that?
It's a workshop that I started. I was a Montessori teacher for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would do it with my kids and then started doing it in other schools. And it's evolved into, I've integrated my yoga practice into it. So we do movement and music and breath work. And I do it a lot with seniors and work with dementia patients and non and low mobility people. And so there's all this different aspects of it. But one of the things we do is we get words from our group. And now since Rolf came along, he gets notes. And then we create a song, and then we'll end up dancing to that or, you know, elaborate on that. Sometimes the kids end up drawing whatever the words are. And it's fun.
I saw a video recently where there was a... an Alzheimer patient, and a guy presented a piano, and he started playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just opened up that part of his mind and just brought him right back.
I've seen people who didn't speak for 6 months. All of a sudden, I'll be singing a song, and next thing, they're wheeled up next to me, and they're singing the song, or I go over and sit with them, and we dance and sing songs, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And Rolf has been a part of that experience as well, so...
When you're not performing together, what do you guys do? I mean, do you have other collaborations or other projects that you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, I think both of us have, I mean, just in order, as a musician, you have to, you know, spread your wings pretty far, and both of us play with a number of different people. I think it's safe to say that this duo is both of our focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's musically very, very satisfying, as well as challenging, and in fact, there's some sort of symbiosis there. You know, the challenge. And
you want the challenge,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and Ed, particularly for me as a guitar player, I can only speak for me. But you know, to hold down bass lines and chords, and then when it's solo time, well, if I go to take a solo, individual single note solo, the band drops out because I am the band.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, negotiating that, it's a marvelous challenge, and it gets me to think about the instrument and know the instrument a little bit better. But So back in the New York area, I'm involved with the Strike Anywhere Performance Ensemble, which is a group of actors, dancers, and jazz musicians. And we do sort of politically charged work, and it's usually somewhat experimental, and sometimes it's interview-based. And that group has collaborated with this group from Tours, France, the Tours Sound Painting Orchestra. So we've gone to France a bunch, and there's some other groups that I play with. I play with Roswell Rudd, a trombone player in the New York area, and I've been on his last couple of albums. And
so he's being modest, just so you know.
Okay. Well, politically charged material sounds right. Interesting.
Well, for instance,
I like that term too. Right? Politically charged.
Well, in New York, hydraulic fracturing was going to be coming to New York,
right.
And that's a process where they shoot all kinds of chemicals and things down into the ground to break up the shale down below, and that releases methane or gas, and then people use that for energy.
Damages the ground and byproducts.
And pollutes the yeah, groundwater,
right.
And it can pollute aquifers. And it's also extremely hazardous to the ozone layer to actually mine it. So the burning of it when you are using it is less than, say coal. But the process to extract it creates even more than that of coal. So what that group did is we would go into areas, into states where either they were fracking or they were about to frack, and we would try to, as neutrally as possible, try to get all sides of the equation. What are the pros? What are the cons? And a lot of times these, the family farms that are $100,000, $200,000 in debt, and you have someone coming onto your land saying, hey, look, we're going to give you $300,000 and you get to keep your land.
Right.
It's really hard for them to make that decision, to not take it. So, we'd interview people, and then we did this show where we had characters that were sort of set characters, but their dialogue would be extracted from the interviews that we did with people. We wouldn't do exactly the interview, but
sure,
we'd take on characteristics, and we would try to get as wide a group of people to come to the performance as possible so that we would basically be doing an Our Town, a demonstration of what's going on in their town, and then afterwards have a, not so much a talk back, we try to get it to be sort of a town hall meeting where audience members would talk to each other, because a lot of times in these kinds of situations, everyone gets set in their way and they talk past each other. Or they
have a discussion. Yeah.
To try to open up discussions, right?
That's great. So you're, not just entertaining, you're giving back to the community and
right, absolutely,
trying to create awareness.
Yeah.
Wow. How about you, Jenna? What are you working on when you're not working with Rolf?
I'm always trying to be working with Rolf. That's the thing. So
this feeling's mutual.
But I had a band here for many years that I worked with that was more of a bluegrass Americana project called the Art Gompers Band. And we still get together on occasion, and Rolf and I do play some of those songs written by one of my mentors. Her name was Beverly Hahn. She was from Michigan. I work with a trio back in the Bay Area quite a bit, and then I also have a band called Jenna and the Charmers. It's more of a rock-oriented, again, with jazz influence through it. The drummer's a jazz drummer, the bass player, and the guitar player, but we all are doing interesting covers, and we have a record coming out in a couple of weeks and have a record release party, but the record's not going to be ready yet in a week and a half. And I also work on a label that Rolf and I have recorded on called Blue Coast Records. I have my label, Mama Grace Records,
mm-hmm,
and Rolf has his label, Water Street Music,
yeah,
which is what our two records are on. Yeah. But I have Mama Grace Records, and Jenna and the Charmers is coming out on Mama Grace Records. And then this one called Blue Coast Records is a label that's an online audiophile label,
mm-hmm,
and it's all acoustic. And I work with Alex DeGrassi on that. I've worked with Rolf. A woman by the name of Fiona and I are doing a record in a couple of weeks. So she pairs people up. She'll say, hey, Jenna, would you like to work with Alex DeGrassi? We're doing something for a Japanese label, and we'll do something, and then Fiona and I are going to do something in 2 weeks, and then who knows, in a month it will be a tuba player or something. Right. I don't know. So I try to stay open and get that creative thing happening, and then the next week I get to be on tour with him.
Right. Mm-hmm. How can people find out what you guys are up to?
Great. Well, jenna-rolf.com, and that's jenna-rolf.com, is our website where we have information about us, biographies, and where we're playing. There's a link for our electronic press kit, which has our link for a calendar, and it has our calendar about where we've played and where we're playing coming up. And we also have individual websites.
JennaMamina.com. And then also, and it's Rolf Sturm.
Yeah, RolfSturm.org.
Org. He's so cool.
You have your own org.
Right, yeah.
And then I was mentioning the Blue Coast. Mm-hmm. It's a label that a woman by the name of Cookie Marenko, who's been an engineer 40-plus years, has some recordings that we've done, as well as other people that I'm on as well. And that's BlueCoastRecords.com.
Great.
And JenAndTheCharmers.com.
Well, you want to make some music?
Absolutely.
Please.
Okay.
Close the shop, let's take a drive. Take a trip from 9 to 5. It's so great to be alive, oh yeah. We could rent some roller skates. We could skate around the lake. If we don't know how, we'll fake it, oh yeah. Strolling. We could have fun just strolling. Rocking, rolling. Oh yeah. Let's forget about the time. Let's relax and ease our mind. We deserve to just feel fine. Oh yeah. We could stroll the mezzanine, buy some dirty magazines, laugh behind them while we're eating ice cream. Strolling, we could have fun just strolling, rocking, rolling, oh yeah. A gold guitar, maybe one day he'll be a star. Give him your ice cream and I'll give him the keys to my car. There's so much hate going round, hard to not let it get you down. Least we can do is make a joyful sound. Strolling, we could have fun just strolling, rocking, rolling, oh yeah. Strolling, we could have fun just strolling, rocking, rolling, oh yeah. Close the shop, let's take a drive, take a trip from 9 to 5. It's so great to be alive, oh yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you.
I couldn't get that song out of my head, but I heard it, so thank you.
It's a tough one to get out.
You know?
Great.